to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal, with hosts Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. Today, we'll be talking with the National Labor Committee about a tour with Bangladeshi sweatshop workers, and with Nancy Gallen from the Maine Global Action Network about the November 17th Day of Global Solidarity in Kennebunkport. But first, this.
The nature of terrorism, factors in its origins and solutions, will be the topic of a public talk by Professor Douglas Allen to be presented at the Blue Hill Town Hall at 6:30 on Wednesday, November 14th. Professor Allen is chair of the Department of Philosophy at the University of Maine, also an author and editor of several books. His areas of specialization include history and phenomenology of religion, Asian philosophy and religion, comparative East-West philosophy, and political philosophy. Allen was recently elected president of the International Society for Asian and Comparative Philosophy. Since September 11th, he's been a frequent participant in forums on the subject of terrorism. In the early 60s, Professor Allen was involved in the civil rights movement in the South and played a leadership role in the anti-war movement during the Vietnam-Indochina War. He was founder of the Maine Peace Action Committee at the University of Maine and is also the education coordinator of the Peace and Justice Center of Eastern Maine in Bangor. The public is welcome to this free event, sponsored by the Peace and Justice Center of Blue Hill. Refreshments will be served, and for more information, you can call 326-4405.
To launch their campaign for support, Bangladeshi garment workers Yanu Akhtar and Nazreen Akhtar have been touring the U.S. with S.K. Razima, president of the Bangladesh Center for Worker Solidarity, and the National Labor Committee's Charles Kernighan and Barbara Briggs. On this Saturday, they will come to Bangor in hopes to share their experiences and galvanize support. They are asking that the companies and universities that are in Bangladesh not withdraw from their country, but stay and improve working conditions and a wage that keeps them in abject poverty. U.S. universities are major purchasers of Bangladeshi products. Currently, workers are paid 1.6 cents for each U.S. university cap they sew, caps that sell for an average price of $17.43. The workers receive less than 0.1% of the cap's retail price. According to the NLC, if the workers received 3 cents a cap, it would make a great difference. We spoke with Charles Kernighan of the National Labor Committee on phone earlier this week.
Name is Charlie Kernighan. I'm the director of the National Labor Committee, which is a small NGO which focuses on worker rights in the global economy.
If you could just tell us about the tour and its significance.
Well, we're on a tour of 19 or 20 universities with workers from Bangladesh, young women. Mm-hmm. And I think students would really be quite horrified, shocked, and angry if they knew the conditions under which their university apparel is produced in Bangladesh. We're talking 12 to 14-hour shifts, 7 days a week, with the most 2 days off a month. We're talking about 20-hour shifts before shipments need to leave for the United States. So we're talking about from 8 in the morning straight through to 4 a.m. The women will crawl under their sewing machines and curl up in a ball and sleep for a few hours before they start the next shift at 8 a.m. We're talking about wages of 8 cents an hour, maybe up to 18 cents. Women trapped in utter misery, living four or five people to one room with nothing, just maybe two cots that several workers have to share. Workers tell us that they're frequently beaten, hit, slapped, punched. Workers report being sick from filthy drinking water, no health care, dust in the air, the seven-day work weeks, the exhaustion, the constant pressure. It's common for women to be fainting at work. When the workers hit 30 or 25 years of age, they're thrown out of the factories because they're worn out, exhausted, used up, and why not replace them with another crop of young girls? 85% of the workers are young women, and of course there is no right to organize. If the workers try to defend their rights, they're merely cut down, fired, blacklisted, maybe attacked by thugs, beaten. There are 3,500 factories in Bangladesh. There's not one single union, not one, despite all the violations, the denial of sick days, no health care, no benefits. So it's incredible that these workers are the same age as U.S. students. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very rare opportunity for the workers from Bangladesh to meet the best of America, which is really the student movement. You've all done remarkable work. But it's also a rare opportunity for the students to meet these young workers who are their same age, but they're not in great universities with their lives in front of them. In fact, their lives are just about over because they'll soon be fired. And this is not a boycott. We want to keep jobs in Bangladesh. We want to keep jobs in the developing world. This is not a boycott. This is an attempt to keep jobs in Bangladesh, but to stand with these women. To defend their rights. As they struggle, we will support them so that they can win their most basic rights. So this tour is more than just a tour. It's a mission. And we all have a lot of work to do. But I think the students will be really quite moved.
Wonderful. And where have you been going on this tour?
Well, we started at University of Wisconsin, and we were at Marquette, and we were at University of Dayton. We were at the State University of Illinois, which, by the way, the students there already won. What we have is a petition which was drafted by United Students Against Sweatshops. Mm-hmm. At the State University of Illinois, a pretty big school, the union president really cooperated before we even arrived, just through pressure from the students, and he committed to staying in Bangladesh. But working with the contractors to clean up these factories, he's calling for an investigation. They're in touch with the Work Rights Consortium. So this is the kind of response we've been. We've been at smaller schools like Denison. We've had a very huge response. It's been remarkable. And right now we're in Ohio about to meet with Congresswoman Mossie Kaptur, and we will speak at the state AFL-CIO dinner tonight. And then it's on to University of Buffalo and on and on and on. It's been great. We've had terrific meetings with unions, by the way. We met with the United Auto Workers, enormous response. And we'll be meeting with the steel workers down south. So this is quite a tour.
Great. And you'll be coming up to Maine on November 10th, both to the University of Orono and then in the evening to Bangor, to the Brick Street Church, Union Brick Street Church.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm sure people here in Maine will be looking forward to this as well. Thank you, Charlie Kernaghan.
Thank you for everything you're doing.
The workers will speak this Saturday, November 10th, at the Union Street Brick Church at the corner of Union and Main Streets in downtown Bangor from 7 to 9 p.m. For more information, you can call PICA at 947-4203.
And today our guest in the studio is Nancy Gallen. Richard Stander did have to cancel due to illness. We hope he'll be well soon. Nancy's been active in a number of local interrelated issues like globalization, or anti-globalization and environmentalism. And today she's here to tell us about an upcoming event in Kennebunkport. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thanks. So tell us about this event coming up on November 17th. What is it?
The Maine Global Action Network has decided that it's time to pull together people who stand in opposition to the administration's policy toward Afghanistan and this war on terrorism, because the media has been portraying a huge support for these policies, and we are sure that people need to find the opportunity to get out and show that the polls are not altogether right.
The polls indicating that people support
great support for these policies. So we've decided to have a rally, a march, and a series of workshops about the situation. And the thrust being to connect the dots, not to just say peace now and stop the bombing, which we will put that message out, but to also show how many other things are interconnected with this.
What other topics are you going to show the relationship with?
Well, globalization, mm-hmm. Corporate domination, oil. Even the past policies and the historical context that is behind the situation that we find ourselves in, and the attacks on the World Trade Center, we feel that there's no mistake that it was the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. I mean, these are so huge, important symbols, and so we hope, for instance, to talk about how the situation in Iraq ties in with this, how Vietnam ties in with this. So it's going to be the workshops will cover broad spectrums and help us to see the greater picture.
And this is part of an International Day of Action, is that correct?
Yes, we're calling it a day of solidarity with the people of the world. And that's really what we want to show. If you'd like, I could read the call to action that's been put out quite eloquently, I think. The date is going to be Saturday, November, from 11 a.m. to around 6 p.m. The place is Kennebunkport, Maine. And it'll start at St. Anne's Church in Kennebunkport, and there they will march 0.8 miles to the Bush compound, where there will be speak out and songs, and we'll talk more about that. And here is the call to action. On September 11th, thousands of innocent human beings were lost to unconscionable acts of violence. The people of New York City, of Washington, D.C., and of the entire United States experience what the people of Afghanistan have known for a long time. The screams and cries of dying mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, sons, daughters, lovers, and friends. The terrible silence of grief. The haunting fear of what will come next. On September 11, our tears joined millions of others and our anger boiled with rage. It is from this common experience of suffering and injustice that we declare our solidarity with the innocent people of the world, with whom we now share sorrow, pain, and anger. From New York City to Kabul, from Washington, D.C. to Jalalabad, we say enough. What moral choice do we now have as compassionate citizens and respectful survivors but to demand an end to the escalating cycles of global violence? How better to honor our dead and the dead of so many others than by refusing to allow more to die? We refuse the two choices that have been forced upon us by the government and corporate media: vengeance or inaction, loyalty or treason, support for retaliatory terror or complicity with terrorists. We will not be trapped into choosing between two global orders of violence. Another world is possible. In the week surrounding November 17th, people all around the world will be gathering to demand an end to the senseless and cruel bombings of Afghanistan and to condemn oppressive foreign policy by the powers of the West. Thousands will protest in Ottawa, Canada, against the meetings of the IMF and World Bank. Many more will come together in Fort Benning, Georgia, to demand the closure of the School of the Americas, a military institution known also as the School of Assassins. And hundreds of thousands will gather in cities and towns across the globe to oppose the destructive powers of corporate capitalist globalization being unleashed by the World Trade Organization as it meets in Qatar. November 17th also marks the beginning of Ramadan, the highest holy days for the people of Islam. Bush promises to keep up the bombing in spite of pleas from our most important allies in the Islamic world, a dangerous and destabilizing decision. Let us give voice to opposing this destructive, disrespectful policy. We stand in solidarity with all of these expressions of global hope, struggle, and resistance. We affirm that we are everywhere, that we will not go away, and that we are part of a global movement of movements. We are not building a narrowly focused anti-war movement, nor a movement solely against the processes of capitalist globalization. Rather, we are building a movement against the fundamental structures and forces of global oppression and injustice, a movement toward a more just, dignified, sustainable, and democratic world for all, a global solidarity movement.
Right. And who is that? Who issued that call to action?
Well, it was issued on behalf of the Maine Global Action Network, and just a few members sat down and put it together.
Great.
It says it all.
Yeah. One of the things that's really striking in this is it touches on the interconnectedness between the different things that we've been seeing people's movements in the past. Kind of the environmentalists kind of made connections with the anti-globalization and human rights, social justice movements have all kind of come together to form this sort of critical mass in the last couple of years. And now the peace movement as well is not, like you said, a single issue thing. They're really, in looking at the speakers that are lined up for this, you're really touching on a lot of the different connections. Do you want to take a second and kind of say what some of the workshops are going to be and who some of these people who will be facilitating them or presenting at them will be?
Sure. Well, we have Mary Donnelly, who is from the Voices in the Wilderness, a group that's been working with the issues around Iraq and the sanctions against Iraq. And she will be talking about the impact of the sanctions on Iraq. And she's been to Iraq and will be giving some firsthand knowledge of that.
Is that the group that does the Women in Black actions, too?
I don't think so. They think that's Afghanistan women. We have Wendy Hazard and David Kubiak, I think Peter Kelman has been confirmed, doing workshops on globalization and U.S. foreign policy and how these relate to what's going on in the context of the war that's being waged. We have Mike Prokosh from United for a Fair Economy helping us to understand the IMF, World Bank, and WTO and how all that relates to the current situation. Carolyn Chute is going to do a workshop on real patriotism. That should be lively and interesting. And I think the concept of patriotism really does need to be examined and talked about and redefined if it's ever been defined. But I think this whole issue of who is a patriot and who isn't is extremely important. Then we have Dr. Meryl Nass, who is an expert in anthrax. And she will be speaking about anthrax and bioweapons. She's well known in certain parts of this state and in the entire country. She's a very respected source of information. We have Michael Yule, who is a Vietnam vet and a longtime civil rights activist, and he's going to be addressing how Vietnam and the movement against war relate back then, historically, relates to the current situation, which I don't know if listeners have heard, but I know I have heard a lot of people in my age category, 50s, 60s, talking about how this is reminding us of those days. And not in a pretty way. So I think it's a very, very relevant thing to be talking about. And Matt Schlobohm and Ethan Miller have been doing a lot of workshops all around the state on globalization, will be doing a workshop on where does the anti-corporate globalization movement go from here and how to build the movement. So that's a quick overview. There'll be more, and they may change.
And so the workshops are in the afternoon, but in the morning there's a march. Can you say
and a speak out as well?
Yes. In the morning, people are being asked to meet at 11 o'clock at St. Anne's Church on Ocean Avenue in Kennebunkport. That's a small town. I understand there's not a lot of parking, so we're urging people to carpool, possibly even park in Kennebunk and carpool to Kennebunkport. It's going to be tight. There is a parking lot at St. Anne's, but it's not big.
Is St. Anne's the I just have to interrupt here for a second. Is St. Anne's the Bush's church, the one that they hauled the protester out of there back during the protest?
I understand it is.
And they've given permission for this?
Yes. And in fact, I understand that the police have been very cooperative and not at all uptight about this, which is kind of surprising all of us, but very nice. It's very nice. So we don't expect to have any real problem. And then, so at 11, we will have some fiery speakers, including Matt Schlobohm, and we hope possibly Peter Kelman. I'm not sure who else has been confirmed at this point, but I think Dr. Meryl Nass will also speak. And just probably 20 minutes of, you know, getting the crowd excited. And then we will march. And it's going to be a really fun march. Shebang Theater is going to do some street theater. They have some great costumes, and they're going to work out some skits that they will do on the way. Peter Baldwin will bring his wonderful big drum, and we invite everybody to bring drums and music makers of any kind. And we hope that people will make banners and signs and make it a really lively parade march. And we'll march to the Bush compound, which has been described to me. I haven't been there, that there is a guard station, and then there is a chain link fence. And we will set up just outside of that. And we will have some time set aside for people to come up and speak their mind as if they were speaking to Bush himself briefly. But that's going to be fun.
Is he going to be in town at the time? Do you know?
We don't know. We don't know. And then we'll have music and get back to the church for the workshops and some food.
Great. So if you could give us some details if people want to get connected into this, a number they could call or any other information that you wanted to put out there.
Sure.
Finish up with contact. I think there's a listserv you said you have, I guess, not a website.
Yes. Well, I'd just like to give my number for people in the Belfast area. It's 567-4075. And mention that carpooling will be happening at Dudley's Diner in the parking lot behind Dudley's Diner. And
in which town is that?
In Belfast.
Belfast.
Yes.
Right.
And my email is ngalland@downeast.net. And also, Judy Robbins is organizing carpooling out of Blue Hill area, and her number is 326-4405. Do you have time to give her email?
Sure.
Robbins, R-O-B-B-I-N-S, @downeast.net.
And what time are the carpools meeting at Dudley's Diner?
At 7
a.m. Saturday morning?
Yes, because it's going to be a three-hour drive.
If you got to leave somewhere at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, Dudley's is a good place to do it.
Yes, it is.
Thank you so much for coming today, Nancy.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
I learned in Korea that I would never again in my life abdicate to somebody else my right and my ability to decide who the enemy is.
Please forgive me.
Back from Korea. I was so mad at what I'd seen and done, I wasn't sure I could ever live in the country again. I got on the freight trains up in Everett, north of Seattle, and kind of cruised the country for 2 years, making up songs, but I was drunk most of the time and forgot most of those. I'd heard that there was a house in Salt Lake City by the Roper Yards of the Denver Rio Grande and Western where there was a clothing barrel and free food. So I got off the train there. I was headed for Salt Lake anyway. I found that house, but right where they said it was, but most of all, I found this wiry old man, 69 years old, tougher nails, heart of gold, fellow by the name of Ammon Hennessy. Anybody know that name, Ammon Hennessy? You're one of Dorothy Day's people, the Catholic workers. During the 30s, they started houses of hospitality all over the country. There are about 80 of them now. Ammon Hennessy was one of those. He'd come west to start this house I found called the Joe Hill House of Hospitality. Ammon Hennessy was a Catholic anarchist, pacifist, draft dodger, and two world wars, tax refuser, vegetarian, one-man revolution in America. I think that about covers it. It was pure hell. First thing he did was he said, after he got to know me, he said, you know you love the country, that you love it. You come in and out of town on these trains singing songs about different places and beautiful people. You know you love the country, you just can't stand the government, get it straight. He quoted Mark Twain to me, loyalty to the country always, loyalty to the government when it deserves it. Get it straight. It was an essential distinction I had been neglecting. And then he had to reach out and grapple with the violence, but he did that with all the people around him. His Second World War vets, you know, on medical disabilities and all drunk up. The house was filled with violence, which Ammon, as a pacifist, dealt with every moment, every day of his life. He said, you've got to be a pacifist. I said, why? He said, it'll save your life. But my behavior was very violent then. I said, what is it? He said, well, I can't give you a book by Gandhi. You wouldn't understand it. I can't give you a list of rules that if you sign it, you're a pacifist. He said, you look at it like booze. You know, alcoholism will kill somebody. Until they finally get the courage to sit in a circle of people like that and put their hand up in the air and say, hi, my name's Utah, I'm an alcoholic. And then you can begin to deal with the behavior, see? You can and have the people define it for you whose lives you've destroyed. He said it's the same with violence, you know. An alcoholic, they could be dry for 20 years. They're never going to sit in that circle and put their hand up and say, well, I'm not an alcoholic anymore. No, they're still going to put their hand up and say, hi, my name's Utah, I'm an alcoholic. So it's the same with violence. You got to be able to put your hand in the air and acknowledge your capacity for violence and then deal with the behavior and have the people whose lives you're best with define that behavior for you, you see. And it's not going to go away. You're going to be dealing with it every moment and every situation for the rest of your life. I said, okay, I'll try that. And Ammon said, it's not enough. I said, oh. He said, you were born a white man in mid-20th century industrial America. You came into the world armed to the teeth with an arsenal of weapons. The weapons of privilege, racial privilege, sexual privilege, economic privilege. You want to be a pacifist, it's not just giving up guns and knives and clubs and fists and angry words, but giving up the weapons of privilege and going into the world completely disarmed. Try that. That old man has been gone now 20 years and I'm still at it. But I figure if there's a worthwhile struggle in my own life, that's probably the one. Think about it. I'd always wanted to write a song.
That was Anarchy by Utah Phillips and Ani DeFranco. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown.
And I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
We'd like to thank Nancy Gallen for being our guest today, Helen York for engineering, Andy Buckley for web support, and you for listening and acting. You can reach us here at the station or by emailing us at radioactivenews@hotmail.com. And you can hear archived Radioactive programs by following the links on Maine Indie Media. That's maine.indiemedia.org. Or now back on our website again, which is back up and running, which is www.freespeech.org/RAN. Thanks to Free Speech TV for the scholarship for the website. Please join us again next Thursday and stay tuned now for Free Speech Radio News, then Democracy Now! In Exile.